Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Get started on your painting project this summer and save big money at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from 5 unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial, so you can get a professional, corrosion-resistant finish on every project. Save big money on Rust-Oleum Spray Paint now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon channel. It is January 2025 and we are taking you on some wild rides in the next few character episodes. Today we're going to talk about someone you've never heard of or cared about. Her name's Lorna the Jungle Queen, and boy is she a character. I'm thrilled to welcome two of my favorite people back to the show, the incredible Harem Scarum and the incredible Robin Moffat, or Negasonic Tranny Warhead. Let me have you both introduce yourselves to our listeners. Tell them a little about you and your pronouns. And I would love to hear a little of your early thoughts before you began your research on Lorna the Jungle Queen, because this was a journey. Let's begin with my dear friend Harem Scarum. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you for having me back. Again, I'm Harem Scarum. Pronouns are they, them. I do a lot of cosplaying for the most part, and I come onto the podcast every now and again to voice Storm, the weather goddess.
Oh my god, the script readings are so fun. I'm having so much fun.
They are very fun. And I knew I was coming into this in the same way that I came into Shurna the She-Devil.
Did you just call her Shurna?
No, I knew it was coming in. I accidentally.
No, I love it. Shurna the She Devil is my favorite thing now. We're gonna have fun today, folks.
We really. This was not disappointed, but also was disappointed. It's a whole mix of emotions.
Welcome back, my dear friend. I'm excited to laugh with you today. And also welcome back to Robin Moffat. Hi, Robin.
Hello. Thank you for having me back. Super excited to be here to talk about probably the strangest character that I have ever had to deal with in the world of comics. She is fascinating and bizarre, but we'll get there in a second. For anyone who doesn't know me, my name is Robin Moffat. I am also known as October Fist. That is my drag persona. I have been a performing drag artist here in Scotland for about the past decade and a bit. And other than that, I am a trans woman. I use she, her pronouns. And what's an interesting thing about me other than my drag? I have two cats and they're currently scrapping outside the door. So let's hope that you can't pick them up on the recording.
All right. Now, February, the academic trial. Is it related to Shurna the She-Devil?
I'm so sorry.
No, I love it so much.
I support it.
So when I do these academic panels, I have to find an academic framework to put them in. We have this mock character trial thing that we do. Both of you are scheduled for trials coming up, which I'm really excited about. They're the most fun we have on the show, although maybe the script readings are more fun now. We're having a pretty good time with those. But I had to go into this kind of odd genre of exploring white jungle ladies. My friend Philip Seavey had a birthday party several months ago, and X-Men artist Philip Seavey, and they asked everybody to put together a 10-minute PowerPoint presentation for their party, and I did mine on white jungle ladies. I'm like, if I got to research, I'll do a whole PowerPoint. So that PowerPoint's going to make its way into the Shurna the She-Devil trial, so you go listen for that. But there's a weird subgenre of white jungle ladies. It's very related to colonialism. It's the idea of the white man goes into the foreign environment, whether that's the Arctic or the the jungle or the Native American lands, and they like are tough and strong and kill beasts and like become the king of whatever's there, right? It's the Tarzan mentality. White jungle ladies are a different category of that slightly. If you go back to Tarzan, there's like Jane of the Jungle. There's like these women that were started prim and proper, but now they live in the jungle and they are the object of every man's fantasy, right? In the early 70s, Marvel launched three books about women, by women, for women. And they were all sexy stereotypes. There's a sexy nurse character, a sexy cat lady, and a sexy jungle goddess. And that's where Shanna comes from. But there's a long history in Hollywood and in fiction of white jungle ladies. And there's this odd thing. You have to wear like animal fur and have like perfectly done hair and always be like right out of the shower and like have a rich interior world where you hope for a man to take you away from all this. And you like protect animals, but sometimes also you kill animals and you get along with like local tribesmen, but also you're gonna get tied up and kidnapped a lot. It's like an exhausting amount of things. There's like so many Hollywood movies from like the 30s, 40s, 50s, right up until now about this odd trope. And Marvel, before they were officially, 1961 is Fantastic Four, Marvel has a long publication history prior to that. And a long-running title in the 1950s is called Lorna the Jungle Queen, quickly retitled to Lorna the Jungle Girl, who's kind of in ways the template for Shanna the She-Devil. And so when I was researching Shanna, I thought, you know what? I've never read Lorna. I'm going to go back and just pick up this old title and see how it is. Not that I often read comics from the 50s. This is the era of the anthology comic. This is where like Journey into Mystery and Tales of Suspense and, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a bunch of different writers cranking out a bunch of different stories a month. Usually there's one prose piece, there's like a 3 or 4 page like typed prose piece, and then there's 3 or 4 different stories that interweave. Now in the Lorna the Jungle Queen, it follows that format. There's usually like 3 different Lorna stories and one about her horrible gay boyfriend Greg McKnight. And then every issue repeats this over and over. And there's some weird themes. I read it all front to back. I took detailed notes. I did not ask you guys to read the whole series, but at the beginning I was like, what is this? It's so entertaining and occasionally very offensive. But by issue like 22, I'm like, oh my God, I'm fucking done with this title. It's so formulaic at this point. There's a crazy number of adventures. What are your thoughts on Lord of the Jungle Queen? How was it for the two of you jumping into this bizarre corner of 1950s fiction? Let's go Robin and then Harem.
Okay, so yeah, I echo a lot of your thoughts that you've just shared there. I found her to be, so I think this might be the earliest comic books that I've ever gone back and read. And it was very unusual, the very bite-sized chunks of the actual physical stories themselves, even though the issues are longer than what we're used to seeing nowadays. As you said, they're broken down into like 4 or 5 stories. And a lot of them, some of them only last like 4 pages. So you're getting these very bite-sized chunks of this character's story, which I found is about as much as I wanted from Lorna in any one go. Lorna was definitely the more enjoyable of the two main characters because, as you say, her gay boyfriend, Greg McKnight, is,
Yeah,
oh, I wanted to.
he's so gay. It's ridiculous. We'll get there.
He is the most homosexual man that a woman has ever lusted after. And
It's
I found
that.
him,
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I find him fascinating. But also, if I were stuck in a jungle with him, I would push him off of a cliff. Oh my God, I hate him so much.
It's that category. It's that category of like white gay guys who like brag about being like a gold star gay. Like, I've never touched a vagina. I was born through a C-section, which gives me a gold star. Vaginas are gross. He's very that. He's like that toxic woman-hating gay to a point that it's almost hilarious. And she's so in love with him. It's really stupid.
Yeah, but it's also just it's bizarre to me that she is so obsessed with him because all he ever does is tell her, "You're not welcome in the jungle. You're incompetent because you're a woman." And I'm like, "Why do you want to hang out with this guy, Lorna? Have some self-respect." It's Lorna is an exercise. She very much mirrors a later Lorna in Marvel Comics, Lorna Dane, in that she has the worst taste in men and she never learns from her mistakes.
And they both have the most amazing hair.
Yes, I will agree with that.
Harem, early thoughts on Lorna, the Jungle Queen.
Just girls getting it done in the jungle.
White
Again,
girls specifically, because there's no
white
black girls
girls
around.
specifically. There's no black girl anywhere in this. There's a lot of black men that are calling her their superior and everything. It's very uncomfortable in many ways, but also like white girls, great hair, getting it done in the jungle without ever messing up their makeup. I don't know what setting spray they were using back in the day, but it's obviously working out for her. She very much knows what she's doing half of the time, it seems like. And then the random killings of animals in the jungle is
Good
very,
Lord.
it's a lot. It's like she has
So
this,
much.
I'm not sure if she respects the jungle because at sometimes she's like, no, that's my animal friend that I'm about to save. And other times it's just the fucking desert.
I wrote a little about the ethics of this because when you read jungle comics, if you read Kazar or Tarzan or even Shanna, there's a lot of this, especially up until like the late 70s. But there's a thing where it's like I preserve life in the jungle unless, and this is awful to say, unless a white person is in danger, or unless it's against the greater good, or unless like the law of the jungle, which is like the survival of the fittest, seems to like dictate that this animal must die. So like efficiency for a mission to preserve white lives is like the most reason why they seem to be violent towards certain animals, but let others like, no, we must let them live. But the white men in these comics, Greg included, okay, so the world of Lorna, the jungle girl, if we're building this in like Saturday morning cartoon, there's like a premise for each episode, right? There's a jungle somewhere that is full of deadly animals, mostly predators. There's gorillas and lions and fucking alligators and giant monsters everywhere. It's a plethora of rhinos, etc. So there's this land, and it has little settlements around that are populated by tribal or native, indigenous or black people. They
And then
have
that's where you have the white people coming in to tell them that their ways are all wrong. And I'm
Yes,
like, wait, what's happening here?
they're called savages, they're called, whatever, but they have different customs. Some of them have very like it's tribal witch doctor, like we sacrifice things. Then you have like a white settlement where it's a little bit more city oriented and it's mostly white people. The black people there are servants and they call their masters things like Bulwana, which is a thing that was like present in real life in like white people settling in India would have like black servants who called them Bulwana. So B like apostrophe WANA is used a lot here. And then the white people have like certain areas of the jungle where they can go and they're supposed to be ethically killing and or trapping animals. And Lorna has a lot of stories where she's either helping white hunters or helping white entrepreneurs or capitalists capture animals in cages, which is some of the earliest Shanna the She-Devil stories as well. We'll get there in the Shanna trial. So there's a lot of those stories, but there's a lot of stories about Greg McKnight specifically. He works on like an animal sanctuary section of the jungle where animals are supposed to be protected, but there's a lot of stories of him being like hired by white hunters and he takes them in and helps them like kill animals, but it's almost like they have a quota. It's almost like I'm here to kill three things and take it back to America. I'm Donald Trump Jr. and I need a lion and a gorilla to complete my collection. Because there's a lot of stories about white people breaking the laws of the jungle, like they kill too many things or they lie or they try to kill tribesmen. And those white people are always the villains, but they're also often, and this is another weird section for Lorna, they're also often communists, which is the 1950s Captain America commie smasher. There's a shocking number of stories of Lorna fighting white communists or evil black people who break tribal custom or like selfish capitalist white people who are in the jungle. But she's often preserving white life. So when you build this little world around her, it's a fascinating setup for these stories, but they get really redundant really quickly, especially if you read all like 50 fucking issues or whatever there is. Haren, let me hear your thoughts. And I want to give us permission as much as we can. Like, let's have the conversation about racism once and then enjoy, because there's a lot of racism in these stories. Not that we can't talk about it, but it's like, oh
It's
no, it's bad.
definitely up there, especially with the part of the issues that I was reading during this time frame, because then they encroach upon not tr like specifically just tribal customs, but like tribal religions and everything, religions that are very much encoded for Black people, especially African people, especially island people. You may not see it a lot in Black America, but you do still see the vestiges of it in Southern North America, the South, basically. You'll still see people practice it in the Gullah Gullah. You'll still see people practice it in New Orleans. It's mostly Vodun, mostly what you would call root work, voodoo, whatever the case may be, but it's always villainizing it in these sort of scenarios. And we definitely see a lot of that here, especially in Lorna trying to prove that this does not exist. Why are you guys still worshiping this? I mean, this is fake. This is not the real God. And it's like, who are you, white woman? Where did you come from?
Lorna is not usually racist. That's the interesting thing. She's racist in that she preserves white life over black life sometimes. But a lot of the white characters and the communist characters are very, very racist. There's a lot of really poor terms and slurs. Some of the black people are portrayed as like very heroic and even somewhat educated, like different customs because they're in a different country, but like educated in a tribal way. And Lorna has a lot of loyalty to a lot of these societies. But there's a lot of abject racism, especially from the white characters, and they're all white creators, like across the board, so far as I can tell. Robin, do you want to talk to us about Lorna's look? She has a classic kind of costume that she's very consistent with.
So I will say, yes, she's got an amazing costume, which is just animal print up the wazoo. It is a
Same for
ridiculous
Shanna.
costume. Yeah, I mean, if you're a woman walking around in a jungle, what else are you going to wear in the 1950s? I mean, it's the most practical thing. She must have the single most annoying tan lines in history. My heart goes out to her. But I would also say, I know, Haram, you touched on this earlier. I need to know what setting spray she is using because her makeup is always flawless. And also, I noticed that she is always wearing false lashes because no one is getting that much lift out of mascara. I don't trust her.
Exactly. Like, where are you
Like,
getting this?
it's crazy. It is insane when you consider that she's like, yeah, I just like, I run around in a forest with my little pet monkey. My entire life is just being like, hot and sweaty. But my lipstick is still serving. I kind of respect her for that, but I also don't trust her. She's clearly selling lies. I
There's
find her quite questionable.
no twig in her hair. There is no mud on her face, but she for sure smells like monkeys. She sleeps with a monkey, you guys. Like it's her best friend.
There is definitely at least one point in the stories where she the animals talk like she narrates about the animals smelling her, and I'm like, yes, I'm not surprised to hear that in the slightest. Like she, as you say, she sleeps with her little pet monkey. She must stink.
High heavens. And if she doesn't, that's amazing too. Again, there's some level of maybe because she's doing all this work, whatever God that she's actually patron to is giving her the blessings of, okay, your makeup will never smudge. You will always smell floral, like the best orchid in the world. You will never ever break a nail, and your lashes will always be full. Honestly, we're gonna do a full beat on you today, and it's going to last for centuries. When they dig up your grave, still be looking like this.
A
The
skeleton
thing
with
is,
perfectly flat hair or perfectly fluffed hair, I mean.
my God, there is also one story where Greg sends her into like the white people settlement so that she can go clothes shopping, and I'm like, he is clearly her makeup artist. Like, that's the only way that this makes sense. That is just her gay makeup artist who follows her around and keeps her looking good.
Okay, we're going to be a little thematic. We are certainly not covering every fucking Lorna story, but if you want to go read some Lorna the Jungle Queen, help yourself. But I got to cover the origin story first. So we first meet Lorna, again, it's the 1950s, and she's drawn pretty hot for the 50s. It's kind of great. One valiant girl, alone and unafraid against the savage terrors of the jungle. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Against the savage terrors of the jungle. That was embarrassing. I'm sorry about that. I bet this is the first I've recorded 300 episodes of the show. That is the first time I have ever burped while talking. I am so deeply sorry. Lorna swings across the cover of issue one on a vine. She's wearing her leopard print skirt and her tiger striped top and a golden belt with a knife in the sheath. She has a fanged necklace. Her hair is perfect. She swings toward a gorilla beating his chest, and behind her, there are masked tribesmen chasing her. Her white American friend is being grabbed. His hat is falling off while he kicks a native in the face. So, violence toward black people. Never great, but Greg is usually the damsel in distress, and we have a female protagonist, which makes this really fun in some ways. So, Adventure One, the first one we read about her, Lorna is confronted by a giant horny rhino eating grass. It's called The Coming of Lorna, and that always cracks me up. Like, we think of this, like, it would be like the arrival of Lorna now, but back in the 50s and 60s, they would always say The Coming of, which just sounds super sexual every time, and it makes me smile. The Coming of, or Iceman cometh, you know, Thor cometh, like, that's all over our comics back then. We see the civilized Lorna sitting with her dad at a lonely trading post on the edge of the jungle, and her dad has been living there for 35 years. She's likely been raised here. He loves the jungle with all of his heart. He's a peaceful man. There's a lion, and they call lions Numa a lot in this series. And Numa attacks, and her father kills the lion with a gunshot, but he hurts his leg. And oh no, the white doctor is away. So they have to call Matumba, or Matuba, M apostrophe TUBA, the guide, who's a black man in red. He has a monkey named Mickey, MIKKI, on his shoulder. He's dressed like like a little organ grinder monkey. He calls Lorna a Mem Sahib, which in real cultural language means like a white woman of high social class. She's called ma'am, and excuse me, it's the words ma'am and sahib put together. And the word sahib means master or owner. So she's basically being called Mem Sahib, or like the wife of the slave owner, which is really awful already. He calls his master Bawana, which is again short for master. We fast forward to a few weeks. Her father is still hurt. Lorna has to hunt down a charging rhino, but the gun jams and she rushes into the trees. And Matuba kills the rhino with a spear, but then she gets the news that her dad has died. She has to bury him, and she's only 17. My father always wanted a son who could be a great hunter as he was, but I am not a man, but I will be what my father wanted with your help, Matuba. So the months pass, and Lorna learns how to throw a spear and kill a leopard. They call leopards Saki often. And the next day, she kills another one with a knife, and now she's pretty soon she's better at Matuba than everything. Spears and knives and tracking and hunting. And some time passes, and she's now made her signature outfit from the beasts that she killed. But now they're attacked by the Wafisi, who are tribesmen who practice head hunting. Again, really racial problematic stories in a lot of these. They practice the like ritual of like ceremonially like shrinking someone's head. And they take her back to the village, and there's heads on sticks outside. And Lorna and Matuba are tied to the stake. But Mickey gives Lorna a knife. She cuts the ropes. Behold, she says, my magic is greater than yours. It can sever any bond. Oh, yeah, your monkey gave you a knife, girl. And she's like, no magic is greater than that of mine. I will kill you. Excuse me. A tribesman says, no magic is greater than that of mine. I'll kill you where you stand. And luckily, everyone speaks English, which is great. And he's referenced as the witch doctor. Your words are the words of the hyena, and your handshakes are like an old woman's, yells Lorna. And she sticks tricks him, and he falls on his own knife, and he dies. And she says, I proclaim myself witch doctor now, and I appoint Matuba to rule in my place, which is weirdly kind of Storm with the Morlocks. Just a realization right now. And they all go before her and they bow and say, great is the white goddess, mighty is the jungle queen. And Lorna heads off for further adventures in the jungle with Mickey on her shoulders. Okay, so this is our origin story, and it sticks. Harem, and then Robin, let's hear your thoughts on the tragic origins of Lorna the Jungle Queen.
It's that coming of age story that every girl goes through at the age of 17, sometimes 16, if they're a little unlucky, again, that they're one of their parents dies, who knows which one is going out first. But they learn all that they can from this great tribesman that they had somehow working in their faith. And like, it's very much, what's that one story about the girl, the princess in the garden?
I'm gonna fail you. I'm unfamiliar.
God, I wish I could give a little bit more information because I remember watching it on TV every now and again when I was little, And I remember having the book in my library. I don't know if I still have it, to be honest. But I remember it was like this little girl who was 12 years old being told by her now orphanage owner that, oh, well, whatever you're talking about, going to these places like India and everything, going to Africa, riding elephants, that's all fake. I don't believe you. And then we find out by the end it was real all along. She gets her dad back in her life. This very much reminds me of that in a little bit of reversal of things, where it's like, no, her dad's still gone. Like he didn't, his death wasn't faked or anything. He was just dead. But
There's
she
that.
still got to.
I was gonna say, there's that really common story in like sci-fi or adventure where like you land on the foreign planet and the aliens are like humans and like they have a lighter or something and they're like, look, I made fire. That means I'm magic.
Exactly.
And they're like, ooh, Lorna cuts herself free with a rope and is like, I am magic. I'm a witch doctor now. Blech.
And it's like, oh, we aren't, I guess this tribe has never seen a knife. I guess they've never seen a knife go through rope, any kind of rope, and just cut it free. That's magic to them. That's again, it's how unfortunately tribes have been viewed, and honestly, some people continue to view tribalism, that they don't know anything about anything, that it's just, oh, anything presented by somebody from the outside world, especially from a white person, that's like they're the greatest, most powerful people, and they can obviously outwit these people too, to the point that they accidentally kill themselves in the altercation.
So
And that.
just in the rest of the first issue, and I'll cover this super quickly. Adventure 2, we get the tagline, far from the safety of her native land, deep in the unknown dangers of the dark jungle, comes a beautiful girl to reign as queen of that jungle. So Lorna's hanging around with Mickey, and Mickey's thing, by the way, he just kind of hangs out with Lorna most of the time, and once in a while he'll drop a coconut on somebody's head or like get captured for a second. But he's a cute little monkey. I like the trope of like the pet. That's always fun for me when there's like a little sidekick pet. Lorna builds a treehouse, and there's a reoccurring character named Agu the Giant, who's basically King Kong. And there's Serpo the Cobra is a giant, and they have a big fight. And then begin the weirdest, strangest battle the jungle had ever witnessed. Giant gorilla versus monster cobra. And Agu kills Serpo. And then the white jungle queen meets a new tribe called the Itibi tribe, and their village is on fire. And they go after Agu because it must be that monster's fault. So we must kill the monster. And they're like, no, save the monster. And we can put out the fire. Look, we can all get along. She's so reasonable. We get a bunch of stories like this. We jump a little farther, and there's like a guy named Putnam who's like a diamond hunter who has like a big old gun and he wants to steal everyone. But like the tribal god Ukaki, who's a giant snail, eats him in the end. By the way, Shurnee the She Devil, her dad is a diamond mine owner. So we'll get to that later in the Shanna trial. But there's some weird consistencies. And by the way, I'm calling her Shurnee forever. Really. Robin, do you have thoughts on Lorna's introduction?
So the one thing that I find really just bizarre about her introduction, I mean, first of all, the positioning of her age being 17, and then her instantly just taking to this like turtle takes to water. Like, she is phenomenally talented at everything. As they say, she quickly surpasses Mutuba at everything that he can possibly teach her. I think it's words kind of fail me when I try and talk about this comic because it is just so odd. I think you had touched on it earlier, though. One thing that I do like is even from the outset, we are seeing that inversion where whenever her gay boyfriend, Greg Knight, pops up, he's the damsel in distress. It's one of the only sort of things that I can say as like a saving grace for this comic is that there is, even for the fifth, especially for the 50s, there is this inversion of gender roles, but only amongst the white people in the comic is that really given space. Otherwise, as we've said, it's really just dismissed as savagery in a lot of cases, which I think is not surprising for the era it was produced in, but still kind of disappointing. I think that there would be genuinely very interesting. I mean, we see the snail god turns out to be real and actually eat someone. Then later on in the comics, she convinces a tribe that their goddess doesn't actually exist. And the implication is that she kind of wants them to worship her instead. She's strange.
There are some black villains in this, and there's a lot of white villains. I would argue there's more white villains than black villains, but most of the characters that have names are all white. It's very rare. I think we see like two black women ever in her entire series. It's mostly black men, and there's only a few white women, and some of them are really funny. But the character that I love most is Greg McKnight, or Greg Knight, excuse me. He is ridiculous, horrible, horrible character, but I find him hilarious. Their dynamic almost feels like Blondie and Dagwood to me, if you guys like know those old comic strips. It's very odd to me. So we meet him in issue number two for the first time. There's a dual threat in the jungle. There's a handsome hunter named Greg Knight, and Lorna is very attracted. Do you see him, Mickey? So handsome, so strong, so young. I didn't know there were such creatures in the world. I want to know him, to be near him always. What's happening to me? Why do I feel this way? She is so wet. She wants him so much. How noble he is, Mickey. He's like a king, as I am like a queen. See how alert he is, how his eyes dart about, how he listens to every little sound. Maybe he'll hear the beating of my heart. And there's, I don't know, it's ridiculous. So, but he's so over women. She wishes he liked women more. She kills a lion, and like there's a bunch of stories of him like bumbling around the jungle, and she has to kill an animal to save him. But at the end, he's always like, Lorna, you're ruining everything. Why do you have to be such a woman? Women don't belong in the jungle, Lorna. She kills a lot of things. She has to save him, or excuse me, he kills a lot of creatures, and she has to save him all the time. Greg's working for a guy named Peter Dooley. People hire him. He goes into the jungle and tries to get them diamonds or like treasures or like tusks or animals, but as long as it's above the line, right? This guy has a weird ethical code, but he won't cross it. Like, if you break the rules, he's not going to support you in that most of the time. Excuse me, Greg's like super shitty and dismissive to Lorna, even when she's like being kick ass and amazing and saving his life. He's always just like super exasperated and like, oh my God, you're ruining everything. There's a story in this issue where Greg sprains his ankle when a like rhino is charging him. I don't know if I even want to go into all of these. Like, it's the same kind of trope over and over. But there's some really funny moments along as well. When Agu the Giant comes back, Lorna kills a rhino that's charging Greg, and he's embarrassed because his shots missed. So this guy has a very thin ego, right? I told you 100 times, stay out of my way. You're bad luck to me. But Greg, why do you hate me so? Because you're a woman, and I hate all women. I am your enemy, understand? And he stomps off on his own. Women, bah, what are they but trouble for men ever since? Since Eve, they take up all your time, take everything from you, and break your heart. Besides, what's that one doing in the jungle anyway? I came here to get away from them, and here, and I find one here. Bah! It's ridiculous, and it's that energy for this character consistently over and over. He's either a woman-hating or like man, pro-Trumpy, gross, like incel guy, or he's so gay. And he just came to this place because he thought he could meet some cute white boys in the jungle, and here's this girl ruining everything. What are your thoughts on the Greg Lorna dynamic? It's my favorite part of this character, even though it's awful.
I think it is very interesting. I did write down in my notes on the very first page where he's introduced. Lorna is lamenting. She says, "White hunters kill for sport, not for food or protection. It's wrong." 6 panels later, she is literally frothing at the mouth over this man, and like he's
And
positioned
the
as,
loins.
oh my God,
I
and
can never forget the loins.
he is like simultaneously positioned as a hunter and not a hunter. Like, he is like both in and out the closet about his homosexuality and his status as a hunter, because sometimes he's just a guide for people who actually do the hunting, and then sometimes he's just shooting animals for the fun of it. Like, he cannot make up his mind about anything in his life. This man ran away to the jungle because he was having an identity crisis. It's the only thing that makes sense for him. I feel really sorry for him, but I'm so glad I got introduced to him. He is the sort of disaster twink that I have met so many times in my life. And I did not think that Lorna would be hanging out with one in the jungle, but there you go.
There's another moment. Let me jump a little ahead. There's a story called The Vulture Strikes. Lorna's riding on the back of a vulture, and like, excuse me. So there's crocodiles involved, and Lorna's helping save some people. And there's a moment with Greg where he goes, "Like all women, you don't know what you're doing. Why don't you marry some nice, quiet guy and settle down someplace in a cottage?" And she says, "I will, as soon as he asks me. But meanwhile, I'll stay here and rule my wild domain. You women always get yourselves into a jam and then expect us men to get you out. Come along, but keep out of my hair." Like, there's just these ridiculous things. There's like super villains dressing in like animal skins and like calling themselves names and communists sneaking in. But just Greg is always giving that energy, and she's so hot for it. Harem, did you want to comment on Lorna and Greg?
I didn't want to comment specifically on Greg real quick. He's got to be the original creator of the She-Man Women Haters Club in Little Rascals. Any words that come out of his mouth, it's like, dang, that sounds like that one kid who's currently running. Well, not currently, but you know, back when the show was running, back when the movie had the remake and everything. He just sounds like that kid. He sounds. The amount of woman hate that's coming out of his mouth is like, dang,
You are
are
scum
you
between my toes.
literally like, oh, Greg,
Lorna, you
it's
can do
okay.
better, darling.
He can literally do plus. I'm pretty sure he's gay at this point. He'll find himself a nice man that he like really likes
Well, the
and will never
counterpoint to
have
this,
to
and we
deal
won't
with.
cover every story again, but there's a lot of stories where like Greg's with his buddies and he's like, "Oh, let's go hang out in the woods together." Like, "Oh, look how strong you
Literally.
look. Let's have an arm wrestling competition with our shirts off, and then we can go hunting." Lorna, what are you doing here? There's a shocking number of those stories. Robin, do you want to pick one of your favorite Lorna stories and tell us about it?
Oh God, there are just so many. I want to just pick out. I want to pick out just one line that she says in one of the ones that I read, where she says about Greg, "I'd be happy to be his subject if only he'd stop treating me like a worthless toy." Like, just to go back to what we said, Lorna, get some self-respect. Like, it is very, very. Ugh. This girl frustrates me. This is the sort of girl that I used to be in my 20s, and I'm just like, you can do better. You can do so much better than this. But I would say.
I had a client in my office the other day. There's just like an abusive boyfriend. When I talk like this, I would give nothing identifying. But she's like, "He's so mean to me." And there's a pause. She's crying, and she goes, "But he's so hot, and the sex is so good." And I was like, "Honey," but Lorna is not having sex with Greg. There's no reason.
I will say I'm going to pick out one specific story called The Jungle Fury, which is a title that I think they use about four times. I noticed that the titles for all these like little mini stories are so recurrent. They seem to have about 10 of them. They just go through them. But this one, Jungle Fury, is about Greg. He comes across a native kid called Nuba, who is hanging out with a lion cub. And then Greg just decides to shoot the cub's mum, and he's like, "Oh, I had to." I'm like, "No, there was definitely a lot of ways that you could have resolved the situation. You just decided, oh, that lion's female, I hate it." Like, even towards the animals, he's a misogynist. This man makes me, he gives me the ick. But he then goes on a journey through the jungle with Nuba, trying to save the kid. Eventually, all the animals, all the lions and the monkeys and everything, all band together and decide to attack the settlement. Because of course that makes sense. All the animals talk to each other and are friends. It's just like the Lion King. And then
Well,
the cub is.
it's because the kid took the cub, and the jungle demands like the cub be returned. So all the animals are like uniting under whatever jungle consciousness and storming the village.
Yeah, this is the thing I find really interesting about this comic, but also really strange, is the sort of sentience of the jungle as a whole rather than the individual animals. I think it's really interesting, but strange.
Well,
And the other thing I noticed.
it's very the Jungle Book, right? Like the law of the jungle is like that theme of like Mowgli in the jungle. If you go back and read like the Rudyard Kipling books, it's very that energy.
It's reminiscent
Yeah, I
of
guess
many
that makes sense.
stories, yeah, that revolve around the jungle in that time period, or even after that. Because even George of the Jungle is kind of like that in some ways. Tarzan, very much like that, because that's kind of within that same time period, different iterations of Tarzan as well. are very much, oh yeah, the jungle's all one ecosystem. It's all talking to one another. Everything kind of vibes with one another. It's like, I think you guys should go back to the jungle and just make sure that that's how that works. I'm not sure though.
I think it's really interesting that you're saying that because one thing that I find really interesting is that in spite of this whole like everything lives together and everything is in this perfect harmony, the sort of natives to this environment, the humans that live there, are treated as morons by Greg. Like they're all like ready to fight these animals, and then Greg comes along and is like, "No, we don't have to fight them." And he takes the cub and takes it back, and he's like, "There we go, we're sorted. We've resolved everything." I'm like, this man thinks he knows better than the people who live in this environment and the animals that live in this environment. This man is the epitome of a white male ego. I am, he
Do
drives me up the
you
wall.
want to tell us about the very next story after them, the double danger? Because this is where Lorna gets to go shopping.
Oh my God. Oh, the story. So Lorna goes shopping because Greg forces her to, because he wants her to become civilized enough to leave the jungle, aka he wants her to stop hanging around because she keeps interrupting him when he's trying to have sex with the guys that he takes to the jungle,
Here's
and
a
it's really just killing the vibe.
direct section of dialogue from this story. Buy yourself some dresses. I want to see what you look like dressed up. I'm making Greg sound very Napoleon Dynamite, I'm realizing. And she goes, I'll do anything for you, Greg, as long as it makes you like me better. And he goes, don't get any ideas, Lorna. I just figure if I doll you up, you'll feel like leaving the jungle to us men.
The jungle's for the guys, ladies.
But
I
there's
love
also
that. And
this character Grace in this issue. Do you remember Grace, Robin?
yes, so Grace is fascinating. So she is an ex-circus star who gets picked up by this guy who wants to take down Lorna because they're gonna, was it,
They're trying to
I
steal
don't remember.
diamonds. Yeah, they're trying to steal
Yeah,
diamonds
that,
from the
yeah.
jungle.
It's always the same recurrent thread. There's always just diamonds that need to be stolen. So she just appears behind Lorna while she's seems to be in the changing room of the shop, and then just clubs her over the back of the head, steals her clothes, runs out the window, and then just goes into the jungle. And Greg, literally, he knows so little about women that a completely different person appears, and he's like, yeah, that looks like Lorna. She's blonde, she's white. Yeah, that's the same person. This man literally pays no attention to the women in his life. And then Mickey ends up being the one that saves the day. The monkey comes along and recognizes which of the two Lornas, because she gets back into the jungle and then she puts on her original outfit and the two of them appear. And Greg's like, I don't know what to do. Like, this is an episode of Scooby-Doo or something. And then the monkey comes along and goes, that's the real one. There we go, sorted.
But the
It
other
is
piece of this,
just
Lorna
madness.
gets like changed out of her clothes and dressed in this like blue gingham dress, and then a guy like tosses her off a cliff. So when she gets back, she has to put her spare costume on. Also, the other fact in this story, Grace is trying to rob, quote, and I'm not joking here. Hang on, I gotta get my right wording. The emergency fund diamond mine that Greg keeps.
I'm going to be honest, I had blocked that out of my memory because emergency fund diamond mine are just four words that should not run sequentially to one another.
It's like the petty cash box at the office. It's just your emergency fund diamond mine kept by the white guy off to the side. It's so stupid. Harem, do you want to pick one of your favorite stories and tell us about it?
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I gotta give it to like honestly the first one on the list that was for me. That was the voodoo madness. Because again, she's coming in telling them, hey, this goddess that you guys are worshiping is not real. And I agree, the goddess named is not real. You don't find any kind of textual evidence of this goddess anywhere in Vidun. Not that you would find much textual evidence because it's mostly oral practices at the end of the day. But She ends up being real, and it's like, oh, well,
And the
obviously
goddess's
this
name
is
is
the
Mama
reason.
Lou, everybody.
Mama Lou, Mama Lou. I loved hearing this multiple times. Mama Lou, Mama Lou, Mama Lou. I can't.
Mama
Is
Lou is a white woman with a beehive hairdo and a green dress, and she is making the natives worship her.
And you know what? She's the reason that the natives are going a little bit mad at this point. There's the re She's the reason that they're all enraged, while th why they're not acting like themselves. And also, we have to put a like a little tiny pin on Mama Lou wanting to mate with Greg. This is very important in the story because there's also another, if I remember correctly from my reading, there was another one in the tribe who thought that Mama Lou was going to mate with him instead, not Greg. It was supposed to be him. And this is what kind of concludes the story in having Mama Lou goddess
And this
not
is like a
killed.
nameless guy in like a wolf pelt, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Just some dude. We don't really get much on him. To be honest, I think you see him maybe two or three times in the story. And then he's kind of, oh, that's the MacGuffin right there to make sure that we get rid of this goddess. And then she ends up being sent back to the Vodun realm. What was it that she said at the end? Goodbye, oh jungle queen. We shall not disturb the peace of the jungle again. Like the whole reason that the peace was shaken up in the jungle was because you guys are worshiping these spirits, these gods that aren't real. What's wrong with you?
Two lines between Greg and Lorna in this particular story. Greg gets to save Lorna for once. He like shoots
Yeah.
someone that's going to attack her, and she goes, "I'm always glad to see you, but never as much as I am now." Well, I'm not glad to see you. Every time I do, there's trouble, and I've used up all my bullets. I've told you a million times a girl doesn't belong in the jungle. And
Oh my God, I sure jungle gumboos.
a little bit later. He reminds her at the very end, girls don't belong in the jungle, not voodoo goddesses and not jungle goddesses. And she says, someday, Greg, I
Okay,
just
Greg.
hope I'll be your own personal goddess.
That got to me. Like, stand up, girl. There's nothing for you here. He's not even treating you nicely. You can probably find someone much kinder, much sweeter anywhere that you've been so far. It still kind of gets me that this is like apparently the first man that she's seen. She's seen so many men by the point that she's seen Greg, but because he's a white man, it's like a whole different story.
Do you want to tell us about the next one too, the devil fang with the tiger?
I absolutely will. So this guy is coming basically to the jungle because he's trying to get in animals for his circus from each area of the world. And he accidentally lets out this tiger that he was traveling with. And there, of course, Lorna's baffled when she finds tiger tracks and everything. There are no tigers in Africa. And that's when we meet that very, very nervous man because, oh God, I let a tiger out and I don't know how to get this thing back. And Lorna promises to help him, but lo and behold, Greg shows up. We don't like Greg at this point. Lorna still likes Greg, but we don't like Greg because also now he's trying to take down this big cat because this is his trophy. Like, oh my God, a tiger? I've never caught one of those. I've never gotten one of those. I've never gotten to kill one of those. And I believe Lorna has to stop him at a point, but like there's so much that happens between that. She ties a snake's nail in a tot in a knot. She finds a tiger fighting a lion. Tiger does win because this is such a man. First off, can I just say this is a man argument that I've heard many a time. Who's gonna win, a lion or a tiger? I think I heard my partner and his friends having this argument so many times. And I just listen in like, okay, why are y'all putting them against each other is my question. My partner always says that he's the one who's going to win, not the lion or the tiger. He's going to win. I'm like, that's such a man argument. Sure, let's keep going.
Are you dating Greg
Anyway,
Knight?
you know what? Maybe no, because I don't think my partner would never talk about women in that way. That's the only thing. He's a little better than that. Like he loves men and women equally. I don't think he
Good.
would ever talk women
That's a good
down in
thing.
that
If that was part of
way.
your relationship, I would be scared.
I promise, never him. I hope he never. So she stops Greg from killing the tiger. She ties the beast up and she takes the tiger back to the dude who's trying to get animals for his circus. And Greg just keeps yelling at her. You always bawled me out for taking money for dealing with animals. That's a woman for you every time. Because,
Yes,
women.
Greg, she says.
Like, fight back. What are you doing? Don't let him talk to you like this.
The title is rebranded Lorna the Jungle Girl just a few issues later, but it's really more of the same all the way through. There's a number of stories about like hidden civilizations. There's like a Roman Empire that got lost to time, and there's like I think there's one of like Egyptians lost to time, and there's one of like I don't know, like mutated monsters who like grew up and everything's like all giant and lost to time. So there's all these stories. There's areas of the jungle you never enter. That's forbidden. And they, of course, do. It's a lot of white people stepping all over customs and principles. It's some of them are really funny, but a lot of them you're like, oh no, come on. I want to talk about a Greg Knight story. There's a story called Greg Knight's Dilemma. There's a group of men watching as Greg has a fist fight, quote unquote, with another guy, and the crowd is yelling things at them during this, like, give it to him and let the bum have it and hit hard and you stretch the big baboon out good and proper. And some of this just sounds like horrible porn slang. And now his boss Peters is mad and he's like, no more fighting, you guys. And if you read every voice in the story as gay, it just makes it more fun because Peter's daughter comes to visit and it turns out she's this gorgeous blonde in a red dress. And there's a guy named Smokey Larrabee that wants her. So Greg has to defeat him without fighting because his boss won't let him fight anymore. And then the girl's like, there's only one thing I don't get straight. If what I saw was all in fun, what's it like when you fellas really fight? Cue the laugh track, end of story. There's a lot of these little solo adventures for Greg, which are also just horribly stupid, but like a little bit horny at the same time. Do you both want to pick one more story and tell us about it?
Do I really? Right, let me have a look at my list of stories. Wait, I just realized you just spoke about the tiger. Yeah,
Oh,
so
was that
what
one
are the other
yours?
ones? No, there's another one where they tell the same story about a tiger that goes missing, but this one is a cage tiger that someone has brought with them to the jungle. It's just
How are all
because,
these
because of
tigers getting
course,
here?
whenever I think, I'm gonna go off into nature, I'm gonna bring my caged tiger with me. It just, what else are you gonna bring with you on holiday?
Night.
It's, as you
All right.
say, there's a recurrence of stories. There's only so many stories for Lorna and Greg. There's only so much that they can get up to in the jungle.
Let me do another Greg story really quickly. This one's called The Trail of Sudden Death. Greg is polishing a gun. It's a typical day at work, taking tourists into the jungle so they can kill animals. But a new guy hires him, and this guy's like this little, like, femmy kind of queer, like, oh, I just want to catch butterflies. And when Greg gets out there and he realizes that's their thing, he's like, butterflies? My goodness, Mr. Knight, you're very emotional, aren't you? Listen, mister, I'm a hunter, not a butterfly chaser. Go find yourself another boy. I don't play games. And it turns out that was just a ruse because this guy actually wants to rob diamonds and Greg has to stop him. But first, he kills a snake and a lion and breaks another lion's neck to protect himself? Question mark. Again, there's just a shocking number of these like really rough stories. Robin, do you have one in mind?
Yes, so you had mentioned about the areas of the jungle that you don't go to. So one of the ones that I'd read was the Lost World, and this is where her mentor Mutuba has fallen ill. He's been stung by the deadly Morta plant. How did he get stung by the Morta plant when you can only find the Morta plant in the part of the jungle that no one can go to? Seems like Mutuba's been up to some shit that he's not willing to admit to everyone, but neither here nor there. So everyone just decides to give up on him, and then Greg, of all people, is like, "We can't possibly do that." And Lorna's like, "You know what, Greg? That's such a good thought. I didn't have that thought in my head until you just said it." So they decide to go to the Lost World, which, to do so, Lorna yanks a fucking condor out of the sky, a giant condor that's about three times the size of her.
She just like
She
grabs it, you
then.
guys, and like jumps on its back. It's just flying overhead. It's fine.
Like, yeah, just grab a condor out the sky, tie it up, ride it into the lost world. They also ride on crocodiles at one point as like basically surfboards. It's very strange. And then they eventually find a caveman who is strangely, given that every other native person in this forest is black, he's one of the few white natives that we see. It's very strange. I guess that's probably why no one else wants to go to this park, because it's where the white people are. So, makes sense. Then they find the plant where the flowers of the plant look like skulls, which is very camp. That is amazing. I do love that detail. And then she brings back the poison. She poisons the native guy for trying to defend himself, which, very colonizer of her. She's shameful. And then she gives him the antidote because she's a kind person like that. She's like, I don't want to kill him. I just wanted to hurt him, which I think in some ways is even more like twisted. And then she goes back, she saves Matuba, and everyone's happy. Status quo has been reached again.
There's a weird thing with her, and it happens in this story a few times, but it's in a few. She has like a knife sheath at her belt, and there's oftentimes when it's drawn at an angle where it just looks like it's a strap-on. Like it's just like
Oh
a
my God,
erect
yes.
penis like standing out from her little like loincloth or skirt or whatever. It's weird.
Yes.
Look, I will say the first time that I turned a page and saw her with her like massive dildo hanging at her crotch, I was like, that is a drag look if ever I've wanted to do one before. Like, I did not think that Lorna the Jungle Queen would inspire me with her massive dick, but these things happen.
I think she would enjoy that vibrator that's shaped like a hammer.
Maybe that's why her hair looks so good all the time. There's a story called The Fatal Fang. There's a very rich, entitled white girl named Nora who comes all the way to this land, and she's like, Greg, I demand you take me into a jungle so I can kill a python so I can make a bag from it, and no one will take her. And she's so mad. And then she gets scared of a zebra, and then her dad gets bit by a python. So, like, Greg has to kill the snake and also its mate, and then her dad is fixed. And Nora at the end is like, now I'm a good girl. I'll have crushes on boys instead. You don't have to take me into the jungle anymore. Like, there's just some truly bizarre little gems along the way. Harib, do you want to tell us about another favorite of yours?
All right, so this is a Greg story. It's a Safari of Doom. It once again shows how much he like really dislikes women. There's no Lorna in this one. There is a woman by the name of Cora Conroy, who he's basically been paid by to take through the jungle so she can find this orchid that's out there. So it definitely seems like she wants to fuck Greg really badly. It feels like it. But it's also like this could just be a whole persona that she's putting on. And we'll get to that part as we get through this. So he's with his what is his, I don't want to say like his guide. No, his guide. Yeah. He's with his guide, Iguno, and they're going through the safari and everything. They're just seeing danger after danger. I'm pretty sure there was an iguanodon in there at one point, which was like, wow, I was not expecting dinosaurs, but here we are in the Congo. You can find anything, really. We see a bunch of, was it monkeys or gorillas? It was some sort of primate that looked like they were about to attack. Honestly, the way those primates were posted up, I don't think they were about to attack them. I think they were just looking. I think they were just curious. And yet they got shot for it, anyways.
Yeah, he
And
killed a
this,
lot of creatures in this one. It's
he
just gun rifle, like
killed a lot.
gunfire everywhere.
And it's wild because you don't need to kill all of these animals, I promise you. And the whole time he is snarking at this woman, like, oh, you still find this exciting? You still think this is a great trip? God, if you weren't paying me right now, I would not be out here. You're obviously having fun doing what you're doing, shooting random animals. I think you'd still be out here. You just don't like that you're out here with a woman. And the whole time she's just, taking it in stride. She's like, yeah, I find this to be the most fun. This is just day-to-day danger. It's not really affecting me, whatever the case may be. She's just having a good old time. And she's like, she's laying it on thick to Greg as well. Like, oh yeah, if you weren't here protecting me, maybe this would go another direction. But I have big, strong Greg with me. It's fine. And they finally get to what she's been looking for. It's this red orchid. And we start to figure out some stuff about her. Because first off, this red orchid is surrounded by scorpions. How's she going to get this without being stung and killed herself? Very worrying. Greg is worried. Iguno's a little worried until he starts to realize, oh, this is a magic woman. She's here because she already knows all of this stuff. So she goes ahead, steps into the brush, and grabs the orchid, hoping to get the same power that she got from it, apparently hundreds of years ago. But instead of getting that same power, her power is taken away from her. Her youth is taken away from her. She shrivels up and dies kind of in the brush. And we see just Iguno and Greg kind of pontificating on this, talking about how she aged right before their eyes and how the magic kind of just sapped from her, and that she doomed herself finding this strange orchid and she should have never seeked it out in the first place. I don't know if this said anything about more about Greg just hating women. I think this is just like, again, another issue to show that, yeah, Greg just doesn't like women. I don't know what to tell you
But this
guys.
woman sounds like a template for Xaladin, like the character from like the X-Men run later. Right? There's these weird templates. The Garak is like the jungle god come to life. Like there's so many of these stories. I want to give one more that I find really exasperating. This is another Greg story. This is almost more of a Greg Knight episode, guys. Which is crazy. There's he's again he's hired by a guy named Mr. Grimm. He's there to kill a rhino. So they go out, they kill a rhino, and Mr. Grimm's like, he's not big enough for my trophy room. And Greg says, looks plenty big to me. Anyway, you only get one more shot at a rhino. That'll be your quota. And Grimm says, these laws are silly. Why protect wild beasts like this? Because they'd be extinct otherwise, Greg says, very reasonably, I think. And Grimm says, bunk. Africa's filled with them. Anyway, I'm making sure my next rhino is a real prize trophy for my den. By the way, Knight, I won't be needing you as my white hunter any longer. By the way, he's often called Greg Knight White Hunter. Greg Knight,
That's what
comma,
I
White
like
Hunter.
realized when I was reading the previous story that he was called White Hunter. I was gonna say something, but like maybe I just missed that in the
Yeah, no, the
previous
word
one. I
white
don't
is
know.
in his title. Greg Knight, White Hunter.
White Hunter.
Lorna, the Jungle Queen, and Greg Knight, the White Hunter. Like, it's very specific that he's white. It tells us that a lot. Anyway, so the guy goes out. Greg's like, okay, go have fun. The guy goes out, but he ends up breaking his leg, and like a rhino is charging him, and Greg kills the rhino to save the white guy, which takes him over his fucking quota anyway. So there's these like weird ethics that always get violated. Okay, we got hidden civilizations, we've got tribal customs. We've got jungle monsters. We've got white poachers and white diamond hunters and white jungle ladies who pose as things to rob people. We've got mystical flowers. We've got the law of the jungle. We've got a white civilization at the edge of this place where they are trying to coexist, but they just are killing fucking everything in sight. And overall, we've got the character of Lorna, who is always getting out of everything. She's tough, she's strong, she's swinging on vines, she's got a little monkey friend, and she's kind of a kick-ass character at the end of the day, despite all of the really problematic content. All of the stuff I just listed is every Tarzan story, every Shaun of the She-Devil story, every Kazar story. Anytime, like the X-Men go to the Savage Land, this is the story. It's, like there's variations, obviously, but it's the same thing kind of on repeat. And there's so many of these in the 60s and 70s in particular. Go back and see my episode on my panel on Kazar, like from a few years back. The Shern of the She-Devil story trial is going to be its own journey, but a lot of these tropes are followed up on, which is why I thought it was fun, would be fun to kind of dive into Lorna, because this is a character no one will ever talk about again. She kind of just exists out there. I assume it's in a slightly parallel universe to our own, but I don't know that we'll ever see her in a Marvel comic ever again, nor do we necessarily need to. Robin, what are your thoughts on Lorna, the Jungle Queen?
I think it's interesting that this episode has been more of a Greg Knight episode, and I think it's because he is such a flawed character that there's really fun things to say about him. Whereas Lorna is like too badass for her own good. Like, she's just perfect in every single story that I read. She never has any problems. Her makeup is always perfect. Like, she gets boring at a point because she's like Wonder Woman with all the like grit sanded off of her. Whereas Greg is the disaster twink, and he's the fun part of all these stories because he's constantly fucking things up. As much as I hate him, I'm really glad that Greg Knight was in these stories. And if anyone chooses to go and read these stories, enjoy Greg Knight, the disaster twink.
And Harem?
I definitely agree in regards to this is very much a Greg Knight episode instead, because it feels like the stories that he's in, he's more at the will at of the set dressing, basically. Like the set dressing is the main story. Greg is just a piece of it at that point. Yeah, you get to have little bits of fun where you can mock him for his very misogynistic stance on women and misogynistic stance on animals too. It's really weird. But otherwise, you kind of like get this really interesting tale of, hey, we're going through this place that nobody has ever really been or touched before in the white world, I should say. But otherwise, you're getting a whole new experience to go through. You're learning, like, you're not really learning, but you're like seeing all these different places, these different animals. You're seeing all these different jungles, these different biomes, and everything. What could be there? What is there? And essentially, it's very interesting. I do. There are problems with the way they hit on mysticism in these. There will
And
always
like
be problems.
that, and wholesale animal slaughter is a problem as well.
Big problem.
We'll talk about this in the Shanna episode, but and we did with Kazar as well. And even with a character like Kraven the Hunter, we see this a little bit. The themes have changed a little, right? Like back then, that last story I referenced, like there's plenty of animals in the jungle. We can kill us all we want. Now we're living in a world where like rhinos are practically extinct, and it's like one generation away. My mom was alive when that story was written, and she's still alive now, you know? So this idea of like unlimited resources, we can take all the diamonds, we can, you know, acquire all the resources, and we'll worry about it later. Well, now we're worrying about it, like climate change and ecosystems, and it's all a huge part of this. So, Shanna, the She Devil stories after like the 80s go from these types of stories to more like now she's like the very understanding. Let's bring all the tribes to the table and we can create a parliament together. And how do we preserve the land? And I'm in communion with the movement of the earth, and we must preserve life at all costs. Like it's very shifty in the last few years where we're trying to reclaim these characters, but Lorna's caught up just in the madness and the simplicity. I would love to have this be like a really camp, like 1950s, like animated cartoon, and it's just horrible music and horrible voice acting. I don't want to see the racism or the slaughter, but there's something about like the world of Lorna as like a comic strip that exists out there that I think is very funny to me. Overwhelmingly, not a character I ever need to read again, but I'm smiling ear to ear as we talk about this. Did I leave anything major out as far as themes or ideas or any specific stories that the two of you wanted to cover in relation to Lorna?
I don't think so.
No. Yeah, I think you've kind of covered everything.
Okay. I'm really excited to see the two of you post your original Lorna the Jungle Queen cosplays later this week. That you both promised that, right? I'm just kidding.
You know, yes, I'm actually still waiting on
Yeah.
the fur bikini to come in. I'm so sorry. It's taking a little bit.
Just ridiculous. Harem, you're joining me for Shanna, correct?
Yes.
Robin, you're joining me for Shanna, correct? So you
Yes.
are now little mini experts jumping into the Shanna the She-Devil trial, where we get to jump in with three more friends and just have these conversations about a different character who I kind of hate more than I hate Lorna, which is a big problem. Because Shanna is like Jane Fonda, but her dad is a diamond miner. She's this rich, entitled white woman who's like very like, I gave up my convertible to move to the jungle because this is the only place people understand me. Like it's rough. Those 70s stories are rough. Like she's hard to read. It's also very sexual. In her early series, there's like a whole cover with her like riding a rhino. She's like straddling it and like gripping its
Yes.
giant horn. And like, you know, it's very like, oh no. It's really hard.
Are even some lines in there that are just like, okay, are we sure that she's not just getting off to this? Somebody
So
getting off to this?
stay tuned, everybody, for Shanna the She-Devil in trial. We're gonna put this out on the Patreon at the end of January. I'd love to hear any final thoughts. And is there anything you'd like to plug? And where can people find you both online? Let's go, Harem, and then Robin.
So again, my name is Harem Scarum. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, Lemon 8. I'm not sure what's happening to TikTok, to be honest. I think that's just gone in a bit, maybe. The last thing I would like to say is I definitely think this would be cute in a little cartoon, animated in the style of Batman the Brave and the Bold. That would be very fun to have. Otherwise, if you guys are coming to KatsuCon, I am having a panel speaking about monsters that I personally would like to top or to top me. So please come through. We can have a whole conversation about that.
I just want to hear the top, like, who's the top sexiest monster?
Man, this is actually really hard because I would usually say Venom is my top sexiest monster, but it has been a growing list over the time frame. I think currently in the top position would be, if any of you play League of Legends or if any of you watch Arcane, specifically Warwick. If like he's very much werewolf coded, but with a lot of steampunk to him. If anybody's seen him at the in Arcane, that's my type right there. I don't know what to tell you.
I get the Venom reference though. He's that big old tongue and he can like grow and shrink things as
Exactly.
needed. It's all, yeah, it's all slobbery.
Exactly. But nobody ever listens to me when I say this, but it's fine, you know?
I fully support you in this. I think I see the logic. I'm
Thank
in
you.
agreement. I
Also,
also
y'all should get on the Martian Manhunter train. He can shapeshift to anything.
I
You never
understand
know.
that more than I
Interesting.
understand Venom, but I'm trying hard. And a Robin.
So you can follow me on, I mainly just use Instagram, so you can follow my personal account, Negasonic Tranny Warhead. I mainly post pictures of either myself or my cats, and you will occasionally see story updates about X-Men shit. Otherwise, you can also follow my slightly more professional account, which is October underscore Fist. That's where I post all of my drag content. If you're in Scotland, come and check out my amazing drag show here in Paisley called Paisley. And if you are anywhere else, just follow me or send me money. I appreciate it. Thank you.
It is truly lovely to see you both, and all three of us get to hang out again for those of this for those of you that really enjoyed this combination in the upcoming trial of Shurnna the She-Devil at the end of February 2025. So watch for that. The next episode coming out on the Patreon immediately after this is going to be all about the character George Washington Bridge. Do you guys remember that white-haired black man who's like so horny for cable in the early 90s? My friend
I
Andre Payson's joining me for
sure.
that. It's gonna be delightful, and then watch for Harem and I both in the next script reading of X-Men 94 coming out at the start of February. We just recorded it a little bit ago, and it was delightful. I'm having so much fun putting everything out. Love the both of you. Thank you for coming to hang out with me today. I had a genuinely delightful time, and can't wait to hang out again soon. Thanks everybody for listening. We will see you back here next time on the Grey Malkin Lane Patreon. And now stay tuned for some thoughts on fascism, as a special guest and I talk about a Red Skull story and its modern applications. In 1945, Germany surrendered, and the Nazi leaders, including Heinrich Himmler and Hermann Göring, were captured. The Allied leaders divided Germany up into four occupation zones, and the Nuremberg trials began. 12 Nazis were sentenced to death, and the term crime against humanity was defined for the first time. In the following years, efforts to remove Nazis completely from public life were implemented. They called it denazification. And in the 1950s, however, it was learned that many Nazis had escaped into South America. Nazi hunters went after them. Some Nazis worked with the US government and ended up protected. In 1960, Adolf Eichmann, the architect of the Final Solution, the extermination of the Jews, was captured in Argentina by Israel, and he was hanged in 1962. In 1965, former Nazi leaders exposed the details of Auschwitz to the German public for the first time. In 1964, in Avengers number 4, Captain America came out of the iceberg, and approximately 20 years had passed. Don't worry about the sliding time scale at this point. In 1963, in Fantastic Four number 21, the clone of Adolf Hitler returned in the form of the Ku Klux Klan garbed hate monger. And in 1964, Baron von Strucker came back with a new hate group called Hydra. Now it's 1965. The Red Skull has come back in the Tales of Suspense number 66, but it's still set in World War II. The story's called The Fantastic Origin of the Red Siskel. He was a nameless orphan in Germany, begging and stealing to survive, in and out of jail, surviving any way he could. And as the Nazi Party preached of genetic purity in the Aryan race and started persecuting anyone different than their ideal, the boy was inspired. He happened to be working as a bellhop when Adolf Hitler met him. Hitler saw something in the boy's eyes, and this story gets picked up on later. There's a lot of details added, but in this story, we see him say, "You, cringing, trembling, subservient nobody, you are less than nothing to me, but I am your leader, your Führer, I am Hitler. The way you look at me, the envy, the jealousy in your eyes, the sheer blazing hatred, I know these emotions. You too hate all mankind. What an inspiration this gives me. You shall be my greatest achievement. I shall make a perfect Nazi of you. You will serve me. You will be my right arm. You will never fail me." And in time, Hitler costumed him as the Red Skull, unleashing perhaps the greatest evil in the Marvel Universe, at least the most enduring. In issues 66 through 68, back in the war, we see a time when the Red Skull brainwashed Captain America into working for the Nazis. Time number 3 out of 100 that that's happened in some form or another. In issue 72, we see the Red Skull perish at the end of the war. And as he dies, he brags about the sleepers, weapons of mass destruction built on Nazi hate that would be awakened in future years once discovered. There's a second, a third, a fourth, later a fifth, and there's a final sleeper after that. Sure enough, decades later, they come back. One of them even has a giant red skull on it, like in a metal form. The threats of the Nazis buried in the ground to be unleashed on future generations. And here to talk with me about the origin of the Red Skull, as defined in the comics, is my favorite person, Sarah Century. Sarah, are you a Red Skull fan?
I fucking hate this guy. When people go, "Oh, I hate him, but he's a great villain." I don't even give this man that credit. I cannot stand the Red Skull. Every time he pops up, it's just a matter of time before he gets embarrassed and punched and just sent upon his way, but he'll always come back, and that is, I hate it.
What is it about this guy? This is like the baseline for evil
Oh.
at Marvel Comics, right? It's the threat that keeps returning. It's the thing that you measure everything else against.
Yeah, and it's like they have this weird admiration for him. It's like in here that Captain America is like, "Well, it gave it away that it wasn't actually you because your skills as a fighter are so legendary." And Red Skull's like, "Yeah, I am a really good fighter." It reminds me of whenever people are like, "Hitler was a great strategist." And it's like, "Hitler was not a good strategist. Did you see what he did to you? Like, he just went like through Europe. Like, he was not a great strategist." You don't always have to give these guys credit, I feel like. And so like this of like, "Oh, but you're so powerful, Red Skull," is just like weird.
Hitler was a good strategist in that he expanded his power quickly, but certainly nothing sustainable. It was
Nothing
through
sustainable.
squelching, everything out. What are your thoughts on the origin of the Red Skull as revealed in 1965's Tales of Suspense number 66?
I'm glad that they don't really try to make me like him. Like, there's not like a redemptive arc. It's like he was a scumbag and he continued to be a scumbag. Like, there might be like a tinge of like, it could have been different or something like that if his needs had been met, I guess, which is kind of like how the best way to fight fascism is meeting people's needs, right? In life. But yeah, it's interesting, I guess, because he's basically just a complete piece of garbage who Hitler's just like, "I love garbage. Let me make you into the most garbagey garbage heap of all." And Red Skull's like, "Yes."
Hitler's like, "The way you look at me with hatred makes me so fucking hard right now. I'm
I
gonna turn you into the
know.
sign of evil." There's something interesting reading this from a 2025 perspective, where whenever we're expected to be kind of sympathetic toward a person who becomes Nazified, we look at kind of a broken system, a broken economy, a person who is like trying hard, and then they just need power, they need wealth, they need the ability to feed their family. So they like sign on with this hate group and do these horrible things. I don't know why we feel the need so strongly to find a sympathetic reason for why someone joins a hate group. But this
Yeah.
story is something we're seeing played out over and over again in modern America and in other places around the world.
Yeah, no, let's be super concerned. And it's like, it always is just too much focus on this guy, I feel like. I think that writers who really hate like Nazi ideology kind of have fun being like, "And now I'm right." You have like Claremont like writes Red Skull and like that New Mutants, like there's a bunch of people who I think who like hate Hitler and who hate fascists, but who also have fun writing him because because he's so awful or something. It seems like just pages and pages of this guy doing spiels and like telling you every little part of his horrible plans and his horrible beliefs. And it like reminds me of how people will hate Trump, but like not turn off the TV. And it's like, turn the fucking TV off, man. Like sometimes you
Yeah.
just can't like let this stuff poison your brain like that.
Yeah,
Like,
you know, I contract with a local agency here. I won't name a name or a company name, but right after the election, I was really fucking devastated. I work with the trans community, and I remember stopping by this agency, and there was a particular therapist there who is someone who works with queer people who was like, fuck yeah, I'm so excited to see where this goes for our country. Like, things are broken. I think this is going to be amazing. And I literally said to this person, like, how dare you celebrate this right now? And they were very surprised by my kind of intense reaction because I'm normally very pleasant. But seeing that celebration was really unpleasant. It happened in both of our families, my husband and I's too, this like energy of like, oh, things are going to be different now. The message of, we want you to have more. We want you to have power, insurance, whatever, blah, blah, blah. People who voted for Trump, I think, didn't necessarily vote for hate, but they did vote for personal gain. And they were willing to overlook the messages of hate in order to
yeah, I
achieve
mean,
that, right?
overwhelming racism is like basically what this guy ran on. So
Right
it's
in the
very,
swamp, try that in a small town, right? The fucking messages, you know?
yeah, it's gross. I mean, it's horrible. I live in a small town and it's very like people, now are getting very angry because they're seeing that they just got like scammed. But it's like there's nothing that should make you think that this man isn't a scam artist. Like he's been doing this again and again, but we just have like amnesia as a country or something. And I think that like these kind of cartoon portrayals of Nazis sometimes don't always help us, right? Because it's like back in during World War II, you have somebody like Charlie Chaplin doing The Great Dictator.
Yeah.
And it's so important because it was mocking the shit out of this guy who took himself hyper seriously. But I think that in the years since, we kind of always we like lose track of how this all kind of plays out, right? It's like we kind of focus on the cartoonish evil, like Inglourious Basterds or like whatever. It's like these cartoon characters who you're like, of course you're so evil. But the thing with Nazis is they were your next door neighbors, right? And so like that's the thing that I think we miss a lot of the time. And I think it made us really unprepared in this country to deal with the rise of fascism.
There's something so fascinating about just Tales of Suspense 66, indirectly. The torture is implied, right? Captain America's strapped to a chair. They dump some water over his head. The Red Skull slaps him across the face. But Red Skull's almost portrayed in kind of like a Donald Duck kind of way. It's all like
Yeah.
comical facial expressions. But then every once in a while, he'll pull a gun, or there will be like a single image of him being crazy violent. Toward the end of the story, there's one image of him standing over Cap, spread legs over him with a gun pulled. And then in the next image, there's this like eerie visage of his face, like superimposed over this like broken, burning land behind him. And then like there's this like implied danger, but it's put in this kind of cartoonish way because you're like, oh, the Red Skull's hilarious. And it's just the fact that he's a playable character at all in this world is nuts.
And it's just like too much. He gets too much time on the mic, I think. And that's kind of how I tend to feel about fascists in general, is like take their microphone away from them because that's how you deal with it. You can't really just let these guys tell you their whole life story. Like, who gives a shit? You're a Nazi. I don't care. I don't care. Like,
To make it silly for a moment, what do you love about a bellhop, Sarah?
oh my God. Well, their outfits,
I
obviously.
love a bellhop outfit.
Yeah.
I love like Tim Curry as a bellhop. That makes me happy.
Oh yeah, no, this vibe of like the bellhop is like a secret fascist who's like hanging out being a weirdo, like not
Yeah,
my
the
favorite bellhop.
Hitler's hanging out at a hotel and like, you, I will make you my example. But I want to see like Michael Cera as a bellhop. I do not want to see Michael Cera as the Red Skull would be adorable.
Oh God. Oh God. Yeah. I'm gonna have to shake that off with a
Then the last
lot.
concept here, because we're going to kind of fold this in here, is the sleepers. There's this kind of epic idea of Captain America having to fight these giant Nazi robots that have come back. The name sleeper itself is fascinating. You don't know how much the Stanley was thinking this through, but the idea of like this evil idea buried under the soil that when it shows up, it's going to destroy everything unless it's wiped out completely is very clearly the message here. And we'll as we move farther in this episode, we'll see how that gets explored in future sleepers storylines. But the sleepers are kind of fucking fun, I think, actually. It's an interesting concept.
And this team and their love for a giant robot, this team and like just their love for this exact story. I feel like this is such like an iconic example of like this specific creative team and the kind of things they like to do.
Well, thank you, Sarah Century. It's a delight always.
This was delightful. I hate this man. I just hate him. I just can't stand him.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.